$7 per month. We would get it every month straight from you to us during the course of a year. As a thank you gift, we offer a USB 4-in-1 charging adapter, one USB adapter to charge your phone, tablet, iPod, Bluetooth, and more. You should see it. It's cool. It's very useful, but it's simply our way of saying thank you. So this is the sixth and the day before the last of our fall membership campaign, so postpone no more. Call now, 202-885-8850, or make a secure contribution online at WAMU.org, and thank you.
There's a brand new kid in town, and he's here to make life easier for us all.
They call me the Sustainer.
He's a man of few words, wears his hat just so, gives to his station automatically once a month, like clockwork. And when it comes to public radio, he's insatiable.
What I want to know is, can you get me that tote bag in light blue? Because that's my favorite color.
Who knows about supporting public radio? The Sustainer knows. Become one today.
From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Kojo Nan, the show connecting your neighborhood with the world. Washington is a town of number twos, with all roads leading to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. It's the supporting players, the deputies, the advisors, the vice presidents, the secretaries, and scores of others who make this town tick. You remember the old playground rhyme, first is the worst, second is the best, third is the one with the, well, I'll let you fill in the blanks. So, if being number two really is the best, why is it a role that's historically disparaged? It's a question that intrigued Richard Heitner, a man who once held the reins of power at an advertising powerhouse, only to put them aside for the number two slot. It was a move that both fulfilled him and made him realize how dynamic a role the office off the corner office can be. So, what makes a great number two? How can you best serve from behind? And how can we apply lessons from the top to our own lives? Well, Richard Heitner joins us in studio to discuss this. He is deputy chairman of Saatchi & Saatchi and author of Consigliere, Leading from the Shadows. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Kojo.
You too can join the conversation if you have questions or comments for Richard Heitner. The number is 800-433-8850. Have you ever stepped down from being in the number one spot in your job to pursue something new? 800-433-8850. You could send email to Kojo at WAMU.org. Shoot us a tweet at Kojo Show or go to our website, KojoShow.org, where you will be able to read an excerpt from the book Consigliere by Richard Heitner there. That's our website, kojoshow.org, where you can also ask a question or make a comment. Richard, it's not often that a CEO of a global advertising agency like Saatchi & Saatchi reaches the top only to discover that he really loathes the job. Can you tell us a little more of your story and what happened after you got to that corner office at Saatchi?
Yes. Thank you, Kojo. I certainly didn't loathe the job. I loved being a CEO for as long as I was a CEO, but after 3 years of being CEO of Saatchi & Saatchi across Europe, Middle East and Africa, I did question whether I was getting as much joy at work and as much fulfillment as I could.
Well, you did more than question it. It is my understanding that at some point you stood up in a corridor somewhere and said, I just never want to be a chief executive ever again. It's horrendous.
I did. And it just happened to be to the talent director, which was, to his mind, quite inconvenient. But I did feel that a stint as a number two would be a truly interesting way to test my own leadership muscles, a different kind of leadership muscle. And it was with a sense of relief that I gave up the top job, as it's defined, to do something different. But I didn't see it as a step down. I did see it as some kind of march towards something different.
What bothered you most about being CEO? Was it the pressure to drive profit? Was it your power over the lives and livelihoods of your people? Or was it the fact that you didn't have much of a life outside the office anymore?
A, a combination of all three. I definitely loved the adrenaline of action that comes with being the final decision maker. I truly enjoyed the privilege of leading other people. But in the end, I did feel that those people decisions weighed more heavily on me than perhaps I would have wanted. And certainly I didn't feel I was the best person qualified to drive for more margin and more profit. I always had some balance in my life. I never was the kind of CEO that gave up literally everything. But certainly there is a greater ability to impose your own agenda and on your more passionate choices when you're not actually the person whose time is demanded 24/7 by everybody who's working in the organization.
Were you comfortable making quick decisions as CEO, or do you tend to be more of a deliberative type?
More of a deliberative type. If you were with my boss, Kevin Roberts, such and such, his chief executive, he used to say to my fellow board colleagues, the thing about Richard is there's no point asking him a question and expecting an immediate answer. We'll need to give him 2 days to come back with his best thinking. And so in a sense, this move to a conciliary role absolutely suits the more analytical, the person who really does like having some time and space to think.
You pronounce the word correctly in the Italian, conciliary. We tend to say consigliere over here, but either or, tomato, tomato, it doesn't really matter. The essence of what we're talking about is the same. And if you'd like to join the conversation, you should know that we're talking with Richard Heitner, who is deputy chairman of Saatchi & Saatchi, and his book is the name we're talking about, Consigliere, Consigliere, Leading from the Shadows. 800-433-8850 is our number. Are you striving to climb the corporate ladder? What attracts you to the top spot? Would you be happy being the number two? 800-433-8850. Richard, how did your colleagues react when you decided to step aside? And how did they treat you in the months or so immediately following?
There was certainly a sense of bemusement because I think at the time, although I don't believe I was a world-class chief executive, I was doing an okay job, a solid job. So I think there was some surprise that I was ready to relinquish that kind of privileged position of being the leader. What happened immediately afterwards, I noticed the very same people who'd been working for me did begin to interact with me slightly differently. You lose that kind of immediate authority that comes with being the captain, the chief executive, and you have to win and re-win exactly the same colleagues' trust and respect using far less overt authority. And in the end, what happens, it did take some time. In the end, people begin to value afresh the quality of your ideas, and you live or die by the quality of your ideas as opposed to the length of your title.
It's fascinating. In a way, you're really talking about navigating the same territory, but in a different way because you're in a different role. Tell me about your job as deputy chairman at Saatchi now. Do you get to exercise your creative juices more? Are you happier?
I'm much happier, precisely because I get to exercise those creative juices more. I get the time to think, I get the space to think. More importantly, I have time to help other people land their better ideas and their best ideas. Whereas when you're the chief executive, inevitably you're dealing with the important and the urgent, and you have less time for reflection, less time to help other people. So I'm much, much happier. And the reason I wrote the book was because I felt, why wait till you're 48 to realize there are many other ways you can contribute to leadership than from the top dog's office?
That was my next question to you. Why did it inspire you to write the book at this time? Did you see it as being important to essentially tell the world that essentially underscore the importance of number twos to the world?
Yes, I felt when I looked around at the what has been written about leadership with almost exclusively the focus is on the top job, how to be a number one, how to be a better number one, how to stay as number one. And so little was written about the craft and the importance of roles that support the leader. And so I felt very personally it was important that people shouldn't wait until they're far later in their careers to understand that there are other roles beside the top role. There was also a sense of irritation with the top guys, that they are hoovering up all the credit and all the recognition and all the oxygen. And I did feel on behalf of many, many people who make great contributions as deputies, assistants and advisors, that somebody had to put a line in the sand and say, just briefly, let's turn the spotlight on this particular role.
And that's what Richard Heitner is doing in his book, Consigliere, Leading from the Shadows. You categorize leaders and their number twos as either A's or C's. And when I first picked up the book, I said, well, this doesn't seem to follow the alphabet. What happened to the bees? But you are looking at a slightly different alphabet that maybe only people in your world do fully understand, the RASCI alphabet.
Yeah, the first premise is let's get rid of the numbers, because number one and number two is iniquitous. It establishes a hierarchy that automatically says one is more important than two. So I thought of A and B, but inevitably that suffers exactly the same problem.
Correct.
B was particularly appropriate because, in fact, in baboon physiology, it's the beta baboon who's happier than the alpha baboon. The beta gets less stress and more joy. But I skipped the B and came to C because I think the conciliary position, as made famous by Robert Duvall as Tom Hagen in The Godfather, really did establish this idea that there are people who love to lead, who do not covet the crown, or who have had that position but are happy to give it up. And I thought A and C would make people, first of all, A, finally accountable, and C, those people who are conciliary, who coach, cajole, counsel the out-and-out leader.
R, the person who is responsible for carrying it out. S, the support system involved. And I, the person or persons responsible for implementing?
Actually, for getting the information.
Information.
The people you need to inform. Yes. So this is based on a project management system we run at Saatchi called RASCI. And you're right. It's actually the kind of principle behind it is to be really clear about the assignment of responsibilities. And most relationships flounder when you fail to acknowledge who's really making the final decision, whose opinions do we seek as the C, who's responsible for landing the project, and who do we need to keep informed? So RASCI is a beautiful way of keeping harmony amongst a diverse set of leaders.
Is it possible that there are times when the conciliary are, in fact, leaders themselves? I'm thinking of the famous Washington Post managing editor Ben Bradlee, who died recently, who himself was the leader of a very large newsroom, but who acted as conciliary to the publisher of the Washington Post, Katharine Graham, before final decisions were made that she made. He consulted with her. He was in her ear. He helped to push her into making those decisions.
I think he was a wonderful role model for exactly what you're describing, the kind of leader that is both A and C at exactly the same time. And the more experience you have, particularly in that kind of role as a managing editor, the more likely it is that you have to adapt to these different muscles every single day. And reading some of the obituaries from the New Yorker, David Remnick talking about his ability to be a great teacher, Martha Sherrill, who wrote a beautiful piece that talked about the fact that this kind of spotlight seemed to follow him around wherever he went, and he was almost present even when absent. So he was that charismatic leader, the A leader, but at the same time someone who one would go to for counsel and advice even in the latter years of his career.
On to the telephones. Here is Daniel in Arlington, Virginia. Daniel, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hello, good afternoon. So I had a question in regards to, now that you have this unique set of insight into both being a CEO and being in the C-suite, do you have perhaps a different perspective on how a CEO might choose their second, how somebody, number one, should look for a number two? And also, if you are, say, the founder of a company, and James Dyson comes to mind on this, who doesn't see themselves as being the CEO, how do you pick a leader over yourself if you're going to be a number two?
Yeah, that's terrific questions. The first one is really strikes at the heart of how you cast. And I suggest that any CEO casts a diverse circle of consiglieri. My own boss, Kevin Roberts, would have at least five or six people that routinely he would turn to for different kinds of advice. And although there might be one defining number two, I wouldn't hedge everything. I would hedge a little bit and not place all bets on one consiglieri. So the way to cast is to be candid with yourself about what qualities you bring to the out-and-out leadership position, to be really truthful about what you are not so good at, and cast a very complementary kind of character. In every case, if you want a brilliant consigliere, you must cast for someone who's going to speak the truth to you, who's going to liberate you from the dull fodder of management, who's going to bring you fresh ideas. The second question you raise about founders who aren't really CEOs. This pertains to many, many businesses where people start a business, they're great, they have great vision, but they clearly don't feel that they have the right skills to lead a business or an organization at scale. And you're right, Dyson is one example, Branson another. And my advice there would be to give people the authority to be A's in their own right and cede as much control as you can to the people who you really want to run your organizations, and allow yourself to play, if you like, the C role as owner, much as a publisher might do to their managing editor, and really let go. And the problems exist where owners actually believe that they are the A and the C, and they don't really want an A in the CEO role. And that's where you get disharmony.
Daniel, thank you for your call. You too can call 800-433-8850 if you have comments or questions for Richard Heitner. He is deputy chairman of Saatchi & Saatchi and author of Consigliere, Leading from the Shadows. Is your boss emotionally intelligent, credible, reliable, and inspiring? Are you conciliary? What is your relationship like with your boss? 800-433-8850. Richard, what's interesting about the C's who stand behind their A leaders is that the best ones are like coaches. They have to constantly think strategically about their boss's next move, which brings me back to your now being in a position where you can reflect more. But they also need to comfort on occasions, cajole, be a confidant. Can you go into a little more detail about the delicate balancing act that C's have to be involved in?
It's very delicate. I think the most important thing is that you're true to yourself, that you always speak truth to power, that you're candid, and that means that C's have to have incredible courage. Quite often, C's are defined by their A's, and they become so closely defined that when the A falls, the C falls too. And I think you have to be prepared to say, I'm all in with this A. And that means you really do have to hold that mirror up to your A. If you feel that that A is actually not being true to him or herself, doing something which is perhaps not helpful to others in the organization. But you have to choose your moment. You talk about that delicate balance. It's, you know, you get to know your A incredibly well. You have enough affection for that A and empathy for that A that you choose that moment where you impart your killer advice.
So that the C should never be what used to be known as a yes man, which would now be a yes person. A C should never be that.
No, I think flatterers are out. And A's who surround themselves with people who are kind of soothsayers, who simply feed them what they want, will soon run out of steam. Bad A's beget bad C's. And one definition of a bad A is the A who says, don't bring me bad news, don't tell me what I don't want to hear, only feed me stuff that's going to make me feel good in the moment. That A is going to have a very short lifespan.
Glad you brought that up, because one type of C leader you talk about in this book is the friend who acts as an anchor to the big boss. In this town, a lot of friends are occupying number two roles in government. How can friends be effective C leaders, even if they're suspected of being just cronies?
Yeah, there is a big difference between being a friend and a crony, and I think it's the word critical. I think friends need to be critical friends. If you're simply surrounding yourself by people who you have a great deal of affection for, but you don't allow them that permission to hold that mirror up to you, then they're not going to have great value to you organizationally. They may do socially, but not organizationally. Valerie Jarrett, clearly, as the third Obama, is a kind of role model for this critical friend. Clearly, President Obama has lent on her, as has the First Lady. There are really key roles that friends can play. Harry Hopkins did it for FDR. They're the people who really do understand what that A leader can tolerate. They know the decisions that they can live with, and they use their friendship and affection to hold that leader true to their values and their beliefs.
Back to the phones again. Here is Sean in Cape May, New Jersey. Sean, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Great. Thank you so much. A great show. And I have experience in the military and in business, and it seems that in a lot of cases, a person isn't striving to be quote-unquote number one, there's a problem. You know, they're not motivated or they're not a hard charger kind of thing. And I think the whole consigliere concept gets to the point that different people have different interests, different talents. And I like that comment about the baboon physiology, that you know, some people as number two might be very well rewarded and affirmed by being number two and using their talents in that respect. As
but your observation about the military is that it doesn't work quite that way in the military, does it?
Well, no, it's, you know, it's up or out in a lot of cases. You know, if you're not striving to be number one, and I think in a lot of situations we may frustrate people because they're really not meant to be number one, quote unquote. They're meant to be those critical advisors, you know, very competent, maybe executive officers as opposed to a commanding officer, maybe kind of thing.
What do you happen in a structure, whether it's military or corporate, where that kind of culture exists?
It's very difficult. In fact, I spoke to one military man who said the extraordinary thing about a military organization, the British Army, is that every career bar one, you could think, ends in failure because there is only one overall commander. The truth is, I think what the military teaches us very well in terms of leadership is that responsibilities are very clearly assigned. That's the first thing. The second thing is this ANC model does exist right throughout the organization. So it's kind of free of hierarchy in the sense that as a young person entering a job, you can very early on test your ability to be a project leader, an A, or a department leader, versus more of an assistant or an advisor. And this book is an encouragement to people to test themselves in these different positions much earlier on.
As Deputy Chairman at Saatchi & Saatchi, what kind of C leader are you?
I'd like to think I was a very candid truth teller to my A, Kevin Roberts. I'm certainly in the I typify these in four different categories. There are people who liberate, educate, anchor, and deliver. And great C leaders have an ability to kind of float between these four modes. I suppose my bias would be in that kind of educational area. I'm mad about teaching. I do some work at London Business School, and I get great joy now at this stage of my life passing stuff on. So I would probably say that's where the accent lies.
Later in the broadcast, we'll try to figure out where you get the time to do all this stuff. Right now, we have to take a short break. Of course, this is the sixth day of our fall membership campaign. But after we take care of that, we'll return to this conversation with Richard Heitner, Deputy Chairman of Saatchi & Saatchi and author of Consigliere, or you might say Consigliere, Leading from the Shadows. I'm Kojo Nandi.
Support for WAMU 88.5 comes from the graduate programs at the Catholic University of America. Now accepting applications for upcoming semesters. February 2nd due date for some scholarships. Learn more at cua.edu. And from Brilliant Earth, committed to environmental and social responsibility when designing diamond engagement and wedding rings and other fine jewelry. More information online at brilliantearth.com.
I'm Brooke Gladstone here at On the Media. The stories that you hear on WAMU 88.5, whether on the radio, the web, on mobile, podcast, or any other platform, connect and sustain us as global citizens. Your financial support provides the foundation for citizen participation and community engagement. Please help sustain and grow this public service with a contribution now at 800-248-8850 or online at wamu.org.
And if you're wanting, if you're desirous of making that contribution right now, we have volunteers here in the station waiting to take your phone call. So the number you can call right now is 202-885-8850. That's 202-885-8850, where you will find a volunteer willing and ready to receive your information and get you out of there in just about 2 minutes. But of course, you can still make a secure contribution online at WAMU.org. We started off this hour with a goal of $9,000, and now joining me in studio is producer Kathy Goldgeier.
Hello, Kojo. We have $7,230 to go, so we're making good progress, but we need for you to call. So please don't procrastinate and call us now. We have been listening to a fascinating conversation about the powerful people behind the scenes, the second-in-command person who isn't the CEO, but who has the ear of the CEO, and who is just as important to the operation. And I would like to propose that here in the world of public radio, you, our listener, are our consigliere, that you're the person behind the scenes who can exert influence on the programming that's available in your community. You have the ability to make your preference heard by supporting the station that you rely on for program like programming like this. We have Kojo sitting behind the mic, but we need you behind the scenes supporting us. So please become a sustaining member by calling 202-885-8850 or donating online at WAMU.org.
And thus you find yourself in the middle of a public radio debate. At the beginning of the broadcast, I said, we are your conciliary. Kathy Colgar just said, you are our conciliary. So that's a debate that you can participate in. You make the decision. Ultimately, the most important decision that we can all agree on is that you are the support system for public radio in general and this radio station in particular, that whether you are the number one leader or conciliary, you are the most crucial element of what we do. Were it not for you, we would not be broadcasting at all. We broadcast to you, and in this situation, we broadcast because of you, because without your support, frankly, we couldn't do it. So become a member now or renew your membership. 202-885-8850 is the number to call, or you can contribute at our website, WAMU.org.
So this conciliary theme is so wonderful for our membership campaign today. So I was thinking about another way that you, our listener, are a conciliary. When you listen to both the Kojo Namdi Show and the Diane Reams Show, when you call or send email or a tweet, you're helping to shape the conversation and you're influencing its direction. But we need your influence on our budget as well. So please do become a sustaining member of WAMU at whatever level's comfortable for you. You can choose a monthly contribution. We'll charge it to your credit card every month, and you won't have to think about it again. It's a great business decision on your part. So please support the programs you enjoy with no more hassle. Call 202-885-8850 or visit WAMU.org to set up your contribution.
And now, some frequently asked questions about becoming a member of WAMU 88.5.
How do I know what amount to give?
That's up to you. Consider how much you use WAMU on a daily, weekly, or monthly basis, and then decide. Think about becoming a sustaining member with an ongoing monthly gift of $5, $10, or $20 from your credit or debit card. And feel great knowing that every time you turn to WAMU, you're supporting exceptional public radio.
What do I get out of becoming a member?
You get the satisfaction of knowing that you help pay for your favorite programs. And when you donate during our membership campaign, you get to choose a thank you gift. Show your friends how stylish you are with a Diane Rehm tote bag or the sleek and tall WAMU travel mug. Contribute now at 800-248-8850 or online at WAMU.org. Thanks.
And if you want to show how stylish you are, you may consider the Big Broadcast 50th Anniversary Shopping Tote. Tell you more about that in a minute, but what's more important right now is for you to make that call. Become a member or renew your membership now by calling 202-885-8850. That's 202-885-8850. Or making your contribution online at WAMU.org. Now, for a contribution of $60 a year or a sustaining $5 per month contribution, our thank you gift is the Big Broadcast 50th Anniversary Shopping Tote. You should know that the Big Broadcast is now enjoying 50 years here on WAMU 88.5. It started by another name, but ever since Ed Walker has been hosting it, it's been called the Big Broadcast. And this recycled tote measures 13 inches wide by 15 inches high by 10 inches deep with a reinforced bottom and reinforced 20-inch handles. The way I look at it, you can take just about anything in this tote bag. It's 100% recyclable, reusable, and hand washable. So call now, 202-885-8850, or make your contribution online at WAMU.org. Here's Kathy Goldgeier.
Well, since we're talking this hour about the people behind the scenes, our membership campaign gives some of us behind the scenes here at WAMU a chance to come on the air and ask for your support. So I'm asking you to join me as a member of WAMU. I've been a big fan of public radio for a long time, and I was a member of WAMU before I was a member of the Kojo Namdi team. So I'm now a sustaining member. I hope you'll join me and become one, too. You can give our eager volunteers a call at 202-885-8850 or set up your sustaining contribution online at WAMU.org.
At a goal this hour, starting at $9,000, we still have $6,930 to go and need your help in order to get there, in much the same way as the host of this show needs his conciliaries. They really run the show. The producers of this show, the managing producer and all of the producers, they are the ones who make all of the input into what goes on this show, and then, well, they shove me out and put me up front. But but they're the ones who do most of the work that goes into this. And we think that's the work you appreciate, that when you can hear in-depth interviews on this broadcast, you know that research has been done. In order to provide the host with the information to conduct the interview, well, that research is done by the producers on the Diane Rehm Show and the Kojo Namdi Show. They are the ones who influence what you hear, and it is in part because of them that the quality of these shows are maintained. Did I say in part? Well, mostly because of them the quality of these shows are maintained. We think it's an effort that you both recognize by listening to, and we would like you to recognize it by supporting it. Become a member now. Call 202-885-8850. Make a secure contribution online at WAMU.org, and thank you.
WAMU 88.5 is giving away a trip for two to London to tour the BBC studios. Everyone who donates during the fall membership campaign is automatically entered to win, and no donation is necessary. More information is at WAMU.org.
Back to our conversation with Richard Heitner, deputy chairman of Saatchi & Saatchi and author of Consigliere, Leading from the Shadows. It's a conversation we're inviting you to join at 800-433-8850. You can read an excerpt from Consigliere at our website, kojoshow.org. You can shoot us a tweet at kojoshow or email to kojo@wamu.org. I'd like to go back to the phones, this time starting with Stuart in McLean, Virginia. Stuart, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Kojo. I've got a couple of related questions for your guest. Mr. Heitner, would you describe your personality type to be that of an extrovert or an introvert? And related question, do you think that extroverts are best suited for the CEO role?
I would say that although I have had to perform throughout my life as a CEO, I'm more introvert than extrovert, and I think there is something that appeals to introverts about the C roles. And I've had quite a few introverts come back to me, having read the book, to say it's fantastic to see some more validation that introverts can still lead. Should extroverts play the CEO role? I think these days one has to be comfortable operating in the limelight. If Kojo wasn't happy to be in the spotlight, he couldn't front the show. I think most CEOs, most people in public office now, whether they like it or not, don't get the kind of privacy that Cs can still enjoy as leaders. A leaders typically have to be out there in front. Of course, those who are not the best public speakers can employ front people as their spokespeople, but such is our technology now that A leaders really have to be comfortable out there in front. So they need some kind of extroversion in their character.
Stuart, thank you very much for your call. We move on to Chrissy in Silver Spring, Maryland. Chrissy, your turn.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on. I just wanted to comment, actually. I worked in marketing and advertising for many years in New York. I was a brand manager in my last position, and although I was certainly not a C, so to speak, on the level of Mr. Heitner, I did support my director and a lot of other people in the department. And I wanted to comment that one of the things that was always difficult for me was the pace of advertising, just the crazy pace sometimes and the frequency with which I found myself having to respond instantly to issues and put out fires rather than having the time to think things through. I just wanted to say to Mr. Heitner, I really think that the message in your book, or at least you identifying yourself as somebody who functions better with being able to have that time, is really empowering for those of us who are like you, and I think it legitimizes this quality for people not just in business, but those of us working in other areas, and so thank you.
You just validated all of the hours and days that Richard
Heitner spent
writing this book. That's precisely the purpose for which you wanted to write this book.
Yes, it is. And as Chrissy says, there are C positions where you can spend more time thinking and shaping outcomes, and there's a great joy attached to that. The other thing to say is A's, of course, also need those people who can help them deal with the urgent and important. That's why they have fixers too. So there are some C's who are more like deliverers than perhaps educators or coaches, as it sounds like Chrissy was to her boss.
800-433-8850 is the number if you have questions or comments for Richard Heitner about Consigliere. Do you think there's a stigma attached to not being the number one? Or do those who advise the top dog get to have more fun? 800-433-8850. Richard, in this town, it seems like you can't win no matter what kind of leader you are. George W. Bush, as president, declared himself the decider, and he was blamed for aggressive unilateral policymaking. President Obama went in promising he'd be more of a listener, and now he's being blamed for weak and sometimes inscrutable policies. Is the best strategy to stay mum on your leadership style?
It's incredible how we set the expectation. Society, whether we're in Washington or more generally, we set these crazy expectations of our leaders, more and more short-term expectations. So we load them up with, these guys are going to make the big, brutal decisions. We want them out there. We want them to deal with the important, the urgent. And then when they pause, as President Obama has done from time to time, we annihilate them reputationally. Or when George W. Bush makes the big decision, we go, what on earth was he thinking about? What's interesting about both examples is that they both are surrounded by other kinds of leaders. And so although you say George Bush is known as the team decider, boy, did he have a rank of heavyweights around him, whether that's Cheney or Romney or Rove, as does President Obama. So I think the interesting thing from a leadership analysis point of view is to look at the diverse set of leaders around the A and go, do they complement well the personality type of this particular leader?
It's the C's you need to be looking at in order to fully understand.
Absolutely.
You start your first chapter with a fascinating quote from former British Prime Minister Tony Blair. Blair says of Gordon Brown, being number one is something he preferred to want rather than to be. Of course, Gordon Brown did go on to be Prime Minister, but his predecessor's quote raises a good question. Even if you've always wanted the top job, how does one really know that you're cut out for it?
I think it's often quite dangerous to want it as much as some of these A's really want it. If I'm casting, I'm a little bit suspicious. If the A's rampant ambition to be an A overtakes everything else. Some of the best A's have actually been reluctant A's. They've been people that have been egged on to be the A's. In this town, I think Thomas Jefferson was a kind of reluctant A second time round. So I think it's very important that one casts for the right reasons and that when one's dealing with succession, one looks at context, the suitability of the candidate, and more. What's fascinating about Gordon Brown, of course, he was derided as the number one who failed. But to those who have paid any attention to the Scottish referendum, this tiny part of Great Britain, its independence and that whole campaign, the no vote, the no to independence, was actually secured by Gordon Brown. It was him stepping back into the limelight as a former number one that really changed the game.
So that meant that he seemed to operate better as a C than as an A.
Absolutely. I think he was a great Chancellor of the Exchequer. He turned out to be a great orator, dealing with the kind of keep the United Kingdom as a United Kingdom. But in that final job, that final A job, perhaps he was an A-.
You say it's important for leaders to be emotionally astute. They need to be able to gauge the temperature of a room. They need to understand how their conciliary are feeling. At the same time, you say that A leaders, in your experience, aren't very good at self-reflection because it's often a sign of self-doubt. So leaders have to be emotionally intelligent, but not about themselves?
They have to be both. I'm blessed with a great A who spends enough time reflecting on himself and the effect of his behavior on those around him. A great A leader must have high doses of emotional intelligence. At the same time, they really, really have to know what their future ambition is all about. Some great A's actually do come to a point in their life where they too actually wish to be released from the tyranny of power and get to a point where they can occupy a C role. So I think one needs to reflect enough to make sure you don't just sit in that position for too long because you happen to be very good at being an A.
Well, just when you were saying right there, it just occurred to me that former President Jimmy Carter seems to have had a great afterlife in a C role when he was not that successful in the A role.
Yes, I think a great number of our A leaders, even when they're given a bad rap at the time, go on to become incredibly powerful Cs. There was a reason they became A's in the first place. They had great leadership qualities. So he would be a fantastic example of that.
In Washington, changes at the helm can come weekly. Most recently, we've seen turnover at the top of the Secret Service following a series of scandals. What have you learned about dynamics at the top when there's rapid turnover because of emergency situations?
I think succession in crisis is very, very difficult. Part of the problem with planning succession too long term is one's not flexible enough to deal with the situation. The Secret Service is unfortunate, clearly, because someone's been pulled out of retirement, Joseph Clancy, a former very good C, detailed to the president, who's been asked to come in and caretake this particular organization, and an A who was given very little time and punished for some clear mistakes during her time as the A. So I think life has become more brutal. We are less forgiving of our A's, and particularly those in the spotlight. So lessons to be learned: be really clear what you're casting for. Know if you are dealing with a crisis that you have to have an A who's comfortable in turnaround situations, very comfortable answering to all the stakeholders whose buy-in they're going to need. You can't really have a safe pair of hands, a steady pair of hands, an over-analytical person coming to solve a crisis. You do need somebody particularly decisive.
The Washington Post reported that the real reason that Secret Service Director Julia Pearson resigned was that President Obama found out from news reports that he had been in an elevator with an armed felon. When is it a good idea to keep something from the boss, and when is it not a good idea? I read where Donald Graham, the son of Kay Graham, was saying that there was only one major piece of information that Ben Bradlee kept from his mother and then told her later on that maybe it was better that she didn't know that information. But when is it a good idea to do that and when not?
I don't think it's ever a good idea to keep something away from the boss if that boss is going to end up being embarrassed, humiliated, or anything like that. So the mantra of Kevin Roberts to me is certainly just never embarrass me.
You are facing a change at the top. You mentioned Kevin Roberts, your longtime CEO. He will be leaving in January. And Robert Sr., who has your old job as CEO of Europe, the Middle East, and Africa, will take the helm. Can you talk a little bit about this adjustment for you, and then more broadly, about how supporting staff should approach new leaders when they arrive?
Well, first of all, our succession's a little bit more methodical than you described, because Kevin Roberts is not leaving. He's staying on as executive chairman.
That's true.
So the A remains the A. However, what he has done is to recognize that for the next 5 years, what he would like and what he would value and what the company needs is a shift at the top, and he's appointed Robert Sr. to be the A, and Chris Foster as Robert's kind of main fixing C. So there's a beautiful kind of complementarity of roles at the top, a kind of wise former CEO playing chairman and now chief conciliary and head coach, a new vibrant CEO underpinned by and supported by a terrific operations number two. So that's the intended shift. And what it points to is a very careful kind of succession planning that quite often is absent when companies think about succession. All they think about is who's going to be the new A. And I think it's terribly important to look at not just the suitability of that A, but also the full circle of conciliary around that A.
Richard Heidner is deputy chairman of Saatchi & Saatchi and author of Conciliary, Leading from the Shadows. We're inviting your calls at 800-433-8850. I'd like to talk about bad bosses for a minute and how they impact their underlings. First, when we look at autocratic countries like North Korea, China, the dynamic between these powerful leaders and their number two seems, at least to us, to be either total fear or subterfuge. Taking this to a level more of us can relate to, do bad bosses usually attract bad conciliary?
I profoundly believe that bad bosses do attract bad conciliary. And it is a dynamic, it is a relationship. And some bad behavior from an A can have unintended and awful consequences. So it's terribly important if you are going to hitch your mast to an A, you need to be really careful. confident and comfortable about that A's values, what the cause is that that A is signing up for, and you therefore vicariously doing that too. So it's terribly, terribly important, that dynamic between A and C.
Well, we're running out of time very quickly, but you mentioned that in your spare time, and that's skepticism you're hearing here, you teach marketing at the London Business School. What are you learning from younger generations about what they expect from climbing the corporate ladder?
Well, the first and most important thing I've learned is that younger generations don't even see the ladder. That data we've collected at London Business School suggests that the millennial generation at least is likely to have at least 16 different jobs during their lifetime. So what I think the conciliary concept offers is a portfolio of opportunities for them to test themselves in a series of adventures, not a linear climb up this ladder to the top, which after all is kind of a shallow chase, because when you get to that top, you look back and realize you forgot to take a few photographs on the way up.
That rumbling sound you hear is my father turning in his grave. He worked on the same job for over 50 years, working his way slowly along. Not so much anymore. Richard Heitner is deputy chairman of Saatchi & Saatchi and author of Consigliere, Leading from the Shadows. Thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you, Kojo.
I'm Kojo Namdi.
Support for WAMU 88.5 comes from the European Union, presenting Kids Euro Festival with performances by children's entertainers from Europe. Open to the public starting October 24th to November 9th in Washington. More at kidseurofestival.org. And from Wells Fargo, offering My Retirement Plan, an online tool to provide manageable steps to save for retirement. Details available at local Wells Fargo stores or at wellsfargo.com/conversations.
Hello, I'm Jad Abumrad.
And I'm Robert Krulwich.
Okay, so how often do you do this? You head out to the store.
Where's the soy milk? Where's the soy milk?
Pick up a couple of things.
Ooh, pudding.
Get that.
And I love chocolate pudding.
Something catches your eye.
Chocolate dipped Reese's.
Should we get it?
Yeah.
You do it. You impulse buy.
Oh, ramen.
Oreo.
Teriyaki beefsteak nuggets.
We suggest instead of impulse buying that stuff.
You don't need that stuff.
Impulse buy us. Yeah, I mean, after all, this is public radio.
Just do it.
Put it on,
and
you go,
think about it.
I love this.
Just call the number.
Why not?
Here's how.
You can do this by calling 202-885-8850 or making your contribution online at WAMU.org. You are joining us on the sixth day of our fall membership campaign here at WAMU 88.5, where we ask you to become a member or renew your membership so that you can continue to enjoy the programming that you have been listening to. We started this hour with a goal of $9,000, and now joining me in studio is producer Kathy Goldgeier.
Well, we had a $9,000 goal at the beginning of the hour, and we have $4,125 left to go. So we're more than halfway there. We need your call right now, please, 202-885-8850. We've been talking this hour about the consigliere role and how being sometimes the C person, the consigliere, can be the position that makes you happier. And that reminded me of something that Nicholas Kristof said. He was an author who was on our show last month. He's a columnist for the New York Times. He has a new book out about philanthropy. And one of the most interesting things in his book was that there's new research on the mental and physical effects of giving. He says there's growing evidence that contributing to good causes makes you feel good and that there's actually a reaction in your brain. So I would ask you, who else today is going to come to you and offer you the chance to become a member of a valuable institution in your community and then feel good about it for a whole year? So please take advantage of this chance. Call us at 202-885-8850 or go to our website at WAMU.org.
And if you are a sustaining member, that reaction in your brain, that pleasure surge, will occur every month, because if you make a contribution of $20 a month to WAMU 88.5, that would be a yearly contribution of $240. Every single month, you will be reminded that you are making a contribution to the station that you have come to enjoy. Not only that, but as a thank you gift, we offer a pair of ski, snowboard, lift tickets redeemable at Liberty Mountain, Whitehall Mountain, and ski round tops. Those tickets are good for any day of the week during the 2014-2015 winter season. There are a limited number of these available, so they are only available by calling 202-885-8850, 202-885-8850. Do it right now, because they are not available on our website, even though you're quite free to go to our website and make a contribution at WAMU.org.
So I can't let this consigliere theme go quite yet because it plays so well to what we're talking about today. We had another author, Azar Nafisi, who was on our show on Monday. She's the author of Reading Lolita in Tehran, and she was here to talk about her new book called The Republic of Imagination. She said that for her, supporting public radio is an exercise of power, that she has the power to influence what kind of programming is available in her community, and she wanted to be sure to use that power. So as soon as we were done with the show, she went downstairs to talk to our volunteers and made her contribution. So we hope you will join her in exercising your power to support public radio. The number is 202-885-8850.
Hi, this is Michelle Martin of NPR News with a fundraising news flash. Your station now offers automatic payments for your contribution. This is a great way to support the station. And if you already pay for your utilities, your telephone, or your cable with a monthly deduction from your checking account or a monthly charge to your credit card, then you know what I mean. It takes just a few minutes to set up, and then you've taken care of your public radio contribution indefinitely. We recommend starting at $10 or $15 per month. And like those utilities, you can go paperless, which means it's a greener way to give. Here's how to sign up. And thank you.
You can call 202-885-8850. Give all of that information to one of our volunteers who is here with us today, or you can make your contribution online at WAMU.org. Just think about why you listen to WAMU 88.5. You listen because you think the news and information that you get here, and if you happen to listen on weekends in particular, that the entertainment value is such that you can get it without having to move from your living room or having to get out of your car. But it does come at a cost. We're asking you to help to pay that cost by becoming a member and calling 202-885-8850 or making a contribution online at WAMU.org.
We've been talking also about the people behind the scenes and what happens. And one of the things I've been working on as a behind-the-scenes person here is that Ed Walker, the host of The Big Broadcast, is joining us on Monday to talk about his wonderful career in old-time radio. And we have, in celebration of The Big Broadcast's 50th anniversary this year, a thank you gift, which is a shopping tote. It's a tote bag that has The Big Broadcast logo and WAMU and a microphone graphic imprinted in gold. This is the thank you gift if you contribute $5 a month, which comes out to $60 a year. We need for you to call to do this. The number is 202-885-8850, and you can donate online. But to get the tote bag, you'll need to use the phone number.
Ed Walker, a living history of broadcasting in Washington. When I first came to this town, he and Willard Scott appeared as the Joy Boys on the radio. A lot of people did not know that they started out right here as students at American University, where they had their first radio gig together, and that continued through the years. Of course, Willard went on to fame as a weathercaster on NBC. Ed still continues to be on the radio here. One of the things we do at WAMU 88.5 is we bring you the past, the present, and lead you into the future of broadcasting. We'd like to think that that's one of the functions you appreciate WAMU 88.5 for. We not only bring you up to date about what went on in the past, we bring you up to date about what's going on in the
past. Thanks for listening to The Kojo Namdi Show. And if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at WAMU.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.